First order of business tonight is a public hearing on local law number B of 2011, a local law overriding the tax levy limit for 2012. And I have two people signed up. If anybody else would like to speak after they're finished, please just come to the microphone and state your name. The limit for each speaker is 3 minutes. Richard Hunter and then Richard Flavel. Richard Hunter, go ahead to the mic.
Hi, my name is Richard Hunter. I live in the town of Newfield. Back in 2007, I come up to a 45th high school reunion. I've lived in Florida for 30-some years. I still do. And the place was for sale, so I purchased it. And since I've been up there, my taxes, my school taxes through this year have raised 39%. My county taxes to date since 2007 has raised almost 20%, 19, but it would be about 25% if you, the proposed taxes. I want to move here and become a resident because I grew up in Newfield, left, and want to come back. I like the hills, but with your proposed taxes, my income isn't increasing. The county ledgers, there's a proposed, I don't know who Joe is, which one he is. Hi, Joe. This is my first time here. You know, you're probably a fine fellow, but I wouldn't have a popularity contest now. But the state legislator made a recommendation that you hold taxes to 2%. And I think by setting a precedent of going above that the very first year is what is not the intent of what the legislature has made at the state level. I don't know how you expect us to continue to... I'm retired. My wife still works. Right after I bought the place, you know what happened to Florida in 2008 and since. The taxes here have increased. My proposed taxes in Florida this year are $3,700. That's county, school, city. My school taxes up here alone are $3,300. Now, I don't think this is right that you can't, you need to push back to the state. Your legislators for the voters, not for the state. You have to represent us, and I think by approving taxes beyond whatever the mandates are or the proposed is wrong, and I hope that you vote against it. I could say a lot more, but I'm just saying I'm here. I want to become a resident. I'm not yet. I'm not on your organizational chart. I'm a taxpayer. I'm not a voter. I can't vote. You want to kick me out of here? You can't. But don't send me any more tax bills. That's all I have to say. Thank you for listening, legislatures.
Thank you, Mr. Hunter. Richard Flavel.
Yes.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Richard Flavel. I live in Lansing, District 10. I don't see my legislator here yet, but I'm sure she'll show up any minute now. I'm here to urge you to override that tax exemption.
I'm sorry, could you speak a little louder?
I lived in Tompkins County 40 years, and I like it here. And one of the reasons I like it here is because we don't turn our backs on the less fortunate people. I've seen the loaves and fishes. That's not just a bunch of homeless old men coming in there. I've seen women come in there with three or four kids this high. You know it's the only decent meal they're going to get all day. I drove Forget About for 5 years. I know what a valuable service that is. I drove you around for a while, Pat, remember? So these are good programs. Tompkins Learning Partners help people to get a driver's license, help people to get jobs. So let's keep it. Let's keep Tompkins County the nice place it is and vote to override that tax. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Would anyone else like to speak on this issue? All right, I'll close the public hearing and open the September 20th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne? Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I'd like to ask for an executive session after tonight's meeting to speak about negotiations, labor negotiations. And for the public, I believe we will not be voting on the law on overriding the tax cap. So if you're staying to waiting for that, then it'll be 2 weeks, it'll be a wait of 2 weeks. But you're, of course, welcome to stay as long as you like. Anyone else from the, just for the public privilege of the floor on any topic, similar three-minute time rule, if anybody would like to address the legislature. We don't have anybody signed up. All right. Legislative privilege of the floor. Brian, not yet?
Yeah.
Are they here?
No.
Okay.
Well, right. Since you called on me.
Go for it. Okay.
I'd just like to recognize three people here. Each year the county has a golf outing, and I was fortunate enough to be invited this year, along with Jonathan and David Squires and Jim. And even though it rained, we had a good day. It really is a good opportunity to mingle with some of the staff from the county and people you don't normally see, we don't see here. And so even though it was raining, I think we had a good day. Of course, we won, but that's besides the point. And I had one other thing, but I do not remember what that is. So, and I do have a distinguished youth that is coming. However, they had some things come up, so we'll try to fit that in at some point.
Okay, thank you, David.
Well, since he brought the subject up and distinguished youth, well, we have the Distinguished Golfer Award. So, legislator Dennis Robinson. Outstanding performance on a field of play, as you know.
That's a rare honor. Jim, something to...
Let me just say one thing. There are four of us on the team, and three of them really do something about golf. And my case, it was... clearly a right place at the right time. So I appreciate it very much. And I agree with Brian. It's great fun to go out there and see the other employees and kind of hang out for a day. But Brian, Jonathan, and David are the real players.
Well, we're proud to be represented by such a stellar team. Thank you all very much. I think I saw Carol first.
Yeah, thanks. I have two totally unrelated items. Brian, we'll try to fill up the time until...
No, that's okay. No. We can do it any time.
First, rather than waiting until the F&I report, I hope you'll allow me to talk a little bit now about the opening of the county's new facility that will happen on October 7th, our solid waste facility. We are having a grand opening. It'll be at 8:30 in the morning on October 7th. That's a Friday. 8:30 to 8:45 or 8:50. It'll be bagels or some such modest refreshments and coffee. And then there'll be a short program and then an opportunity to tour a short tour of the facility, and all of that will happen in time for us to start the F&I meeting at 9:30. So I really encourage everybody's invited, people from out in the municipalities who might be listening at the beginning of our meeting now, you are welcome to come and see the fine facility that we're opening. On a totally unrelated matter, last meeting, I think it was, I took the time to tell you a personal story about racism, and I had the opportunity to attend an event the other night, and then was just appalled to see how the event was portrayed in the Ithaca Journal. And I don't think it's the Ithaca Journal per se. I just want to talk about sort of a little bit of the way that I think institutional racism operates and our assumptions about what we have to pay attention to or not. A big headline reads, Cornell University honors an activist intellectual. It was about the honoring of the retirement of James and Janice Turner. James was a newcomer at the same time as I was in Ithaca, 1968. He knew something about the world and I didn't, and I have learned an awful lot from him over the years. He was hired in as director of the Cornell Africana Center, and I just think that Cornell did not hold an event and honor his retirement. People in the downtown community did. And I think it was pretty clear during the event that that was true. So this is totally inaccurate. The headline is inaccurate. The story is a little bit better. But I think that a headline like this just isn't worthy of our community. The assumption that the reporter or the headline writer didn't need to know on this particular topic enough about the community to write the headline, to just toss it off, when this discussion about this has been so prominent in the community.
What is the headline, Carol?
The headline says, Cornell University honors an activist intellectual, James Turner lauded for pioneering a discipline. And he did. He created the term Africana Studies. People all over the country come to study with him, or came for 40 years to study with him. I still don't think that we, as a legislature, have an official place to weigh in on what the university ought to do with Africana studies. I have done so through my own Cornell connections. But I do think that institutionally, I'm disappointed that as an institution, that there hasn't been more discussion with the people who should be listened to, the alumni, the other faculty, the students, the staff, the community there. And then it's been such a topic of conversation in the community that I just think that our newspaper of record should print a bigger correction than a little tiny thing in the corrections column. It should be as big as this, and it should talk about some of the ways in which the community feels like it needs, the black community feels like it needs this kind of support that the Africana Studies Center has provided to them. And that the university, people at the university feel that that they would not be able to hire black faculty to come to a community that didn't have a supportive community. So I didn't want only that community to be weighing in on it, and since I had weighed in so at length on the personal story, I thought I would say something tonight. Thank you.
I have Pat, Will, Nathan, and Jim, Dooley, and Frank. Okay.
This is an announcement about the broadband committee. Typically, we meet the fourth Monday of the month, and that would fall on September 26th. And this month, the committee, for those of you who may have been planning to attend, whether you're on the legislature or some of our guests who have attended from the community, we are not going to be meeting as a full group on September 26th, as we usually do. Instead, our subcommittees will be meeting at various times throughout the month, so the work will be continuing, but not our regular meeting. We will reconvene in October, on October 24th at 5:30. So just wanted to let you know.
Thank you, Pat. Will?
Thank you, Martha. I was happy to see at least two people come out and speak with us about the proposed move to go above the tax cap limit. It was interesting that they were opposing views, and I'm sorry the gentleman that spoke in, against it has left. I wanted to convey that I think any of us would be very, very happy to sit down and explain to him our the situation that the state has placed us in, where the mandates they have continued to that they are continuing to exert exceed what we could do under the tax cap. You all know this, and I hope that the public will continue to learn about this, because I think it's a real difficult thing. I also wanted to note that last Friday I had the pleasure of joining several of us at a very nice event put on by the Soil and Water Office out of the Cary Farm in Groton. And I guess Pat was there, Mike was there, Peter, and Jim. And did I miss anybody?
Thank
Martha.
Okay. And Martha. Oh, yeah. Thank you. So besides a very nice chicken barbecue, we got a chance to see a lot of the different people that have been doing very, very important work in terms of protecting our physical environment and dealing with natural erosion and trying to prevent that. One thing that I learned sort of on the side, it wasn't part of the formal program, but talking with Roxy Johnson, who's the city's watershed coordinator, was this issue that you may have read about called the hydrilla, which is this invasive plant that's recently been discovered in our inlet waterway, and it has an enormous potential to do real damage to the lake area as we know it, and we've got to figure out some way to get control. I asked her if there was any place in the country where this had been found that they've successfully been doing it, and he said that actually in California they are currently they have a protocol that allows them to go in and deal with the problem, essentially stop all movement of boats and treat it. We in New York State do not have the legal authority, as far as she knows, to prevent all traffic movement. We can do it voluntarily, and that is what has been called for. They're going to be treating it soon, and they have asked that there not be boats moving while that happens. So it's a problem and something we should all be paying attention to. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Nathan, Jim, Dooley, Frank, and Peter.
Yes, I had the opportunity to go to the last hour and a half or so of the event for Dr. Turner. And I just wanted to tell a little bit of my story about Dr. Turner. So Dr. Turner is a close friend. I actually took over 20 credits in the Africana Center, a couple of those classes with Professor Turner. He gave me my worst grades at Cornell, like the absolute worst grades. But he was my favorite professor because he challenged me on a regular basis. And in my senior year, when I was debating what I wanted to do, I had the choice of basically working for a activist organization in Washington, D.C., or running for the county legislature. And I was torn about the idea, and I actually, and I would often talk to him about, you know, shouldn't one join the system? That was my question, because my activist friends always said, don't join the system, because once you're part of the system takes you over. And it was actually Professor Turner that said, no, that's not the case. He said, read this book, and he gave me the book Ready for Revolution, by, which is the story of Stokely Carmichael, or now Kwame Ture, who passed away. And what's interesting about this story is that, Stokely Carmichael, he was the head of SNCC back in the day, right? In the 60s, he went on to, help in movements in Africa as well. And at the end of his life, when he was dying of cancer in New York City, he actually reflected on his life. And he recognized that there were a lot of people like John Lewis and Charlie Rangel and others that he would often demonize for becoming congressman and becoming part of the system. But then he realized at the end of his life that they were so effective inside of that system. And so the activists were able to push, and the people on the inside were also able to push, and things were able to get done. And so Professor Turner gave me that insight. He even helped me meet Michael Thelwell, who is the guy that co-wrote the book Ready for Revolution with Stokely Carmichael. And it was just such a life-changing moment in 2005 for me. And that's when I decided that I would, you know, stick with running for the county legislature and not accept that job in Washington. But it's just, that story is just so interesting because everybody, you know, has their own story about Professor Turner. And, you know, and sometimes the word activist, it's like, you know, you think agitator. But, I mean, but Professor Turner also, I mean, his view, I mean, he's such a wise person. And just that insight that he gave me when I was 21 years old, that was powerful, and it changed the course of my life. And I greatly appreciate him for it.
And we're glad that resulted in your being here, Nathan.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Jim, Dooley, Frank, Peter.
Thank you, Martha. I wanted to mention to all of you Chuck Broadhead. He passed away recently after a battle with cancer. He came to Tompkins County 45 years ago. He was a Michigan Wolverine. He graduated with a communications and public relations degree. And he led a life of service to his family, to his business associates, and to his community for sure. A couple of things he was involved in. Founding member of the IPEI, which many of you know is a public education initiative group that raises money and gives it out to teachers in the Ithaca School District on special programs. President of Lifelong. Volunteered on many, many boards in the community and committees. He and his partner, Howard Kogan, started a group called VOPRO, and the group was designed to improve the image of vocational education in Tompkins County. And he was also a member of our PIAB board for many years. And I think the community has lost a stellar volunteer, and I wanted to recognize him as one person. Marcia worked with him, and I know many, many people in the community worked with him on many boards. And he's the kind of person that makes Ithaca go.
Thank you, Jim. Dooley, Frank, Peter, and Mike.
Well, I hope you'll be patient with me tonight. I have more than one topic which I want to mention. And I'm stealing some of Frank's thunder, perhaps. The first one is a consumer item. Cell phone numbers go public this month. And if you want to prevent your cell phone from being on a public list, accessible to any advertisers or anybody who wants to call you, there's a number you can call to get off that going public, and the number is 888-382-1222. It's a national do not call list, and it'll be good for 5 years.
Repeat that, please.
888-382-1222. You have to call from the cell phone whose number you want not listed. So if you have more than one cell phone, you've got to make more than one call.
Can you repeat the number once more?
I can. 888.
Slowly, Dooley.
I will repeat the area again. 888-382-1222.
Could I just, are we sure that that's verified, that it doesn't sign you up anywhere? That it's a good number that doesn't sign you up for more marketing? Thanks.
That's a reasonable question, Carol. Another sort of consumer item. On October 1st, there's going to be another safe medication disposal day. I'm not going to tell you all about it. It's at several different locations at different times, but it's October 1st, and there will be lots of publicity. A third item is not a consumer item, but it's just of interest, I think, to the legislature, because we spent some time considering the IDA's role in the BJ's Warehouse Club development in Lansing. And it has turned out that the developer now wants to add a gas station to the development. Gas station open just for members, which is what they have at many of their BJ's clubs. But to make it attractive to the village of Lansing, it is supposed to also have two electric vehicle charging stations, not clear which ones will be used. They talked about which they might put in. But the idea that they're adding a gas pumps now next to the supposedly peaceful senior housing is a little disturbing, and I thought you all would be interested in that. I brought more information to talk about hydrilla, and if you'll be patient, I'll talk a little bit more about it. Everything Will said is absolutely correct. It's a very serious threat. To the extent that there can be any good news associated with it, it appears that this is the first year that hydrilla has actually been in the inlet. There was a careful look in August by, August 5th to August 22nd. The inlet between Treeman Marine Park and Route 89 Bridge was surveyed by R. Johnson and his experienced field crew from Cornell, and their surveys revealed dense beds in several areas, up to 6 to 8 acres in total, that, as we know, get a lot of boat traffic. They also noted rooted fragments throughout the navigable channel down as deep as 12 feet. Because the channel is so murky, it's hard to use hand removal by divers, because as soon as you pull something out, the water gets cloudy. So that traditional way of first removing it is not really available to us. Then in the first week of September, a much more systematic survey was done on the southern shelf of the lake, a 50-meter by 50-meter grid with 347 locations sampled. And although fragments were found, only 7 locations out in the lake itself. So it's all within the inlet and its mouth. 1 fragment was found floating. The fact that these are only a year old means that they haven't rooted. There are not tubers underground, which is the bad thing. Once they get down there, they last for 3 to 5 or up to 10 years, so it's very hard to get rid of them. And by the end of September, the plants that are actually in our inlet now will be setting tourbillons on their different fronds. Those can also settle and become new plants. So this has to be acted on really by the end of September. And the city has released a press release discouraging use of boats in the inlets. Discouraging boats is very difficult to do. They are asking local boaters to not take their boats out of the water early and to leave whatever washing stations and inspections can be done for transient boats that are more likely to be pulled out early. We have a sheriff who actually is the only authority who could stop boat traffic, and I don't know whether our sheriff has been approached and intends to act or not, but as Will said, New York State does not have a law in place that allows for emergency control of aquatic invasive species. As a county, we could pass such a local law, but as you all know, it takes us a while to do that. I hope we will move forward and do that, but it'll be too late to affect this need to capture these plants in all their parts this September. And the most likely thing to be used is an herbicide, which is one that has been used in California and used successfully. It's not an ideal thing to put into our water. We certainly don't want it to carry up as far as Bolton Point or to any of the cottages who take water from the lake. So it's the least of evils that we can use, and I hope it gets used now very soon. I hope I didn't take up too much time. The estimate from the woman at Cornell, the Invasive Species Institute director, Holly Menninger, and Roxy Johnson from the City Water Plant, and Craig Scott from Soil and Water, is that the cost to treat this correctly, if I can find the dollar numbers, it's non-trivial. It's something like $60,000 to $150,000. I don't know who might be contributing to this, but $60,000 to $150,000 is the initial cost estimate. And then we'd have to follow up with a sustained effort each year thereafter for probably 5 years. In any event, that pales in comparison to the multi-million dollars it would cost if it gets out into the lake to try to do anything. So if the county is approached to contribute to this effort, I hope that we will take it seriously and find some money in our contingent fund to put toward this.
Thank you, Julie. I'm going to ask Joe to talk about that for a minute.
We have been approached. Craig Scott has sent an email asking for us to contribute to the solution. I think his target for us is $26,000. We are looking at that right now. We've brought environmental health into the conversation. We want to make sure that everything is appropriate on that front. But we'll likely be coming to PDAC at its next meeting to ask for a draw from contingency so that we can participate in the solution. We also will try to find out if others are going to join us in this, whether the city will contribute, for example. But again, by committee time, I would expect to have a resolution ready that would draw from contingency to help this.
Good. I'm not Thank finished, you. If you can stand it anymore. I have two more things.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Carol.
A quick question on this topic. Has anybody working with the state park for the marina and maybe the private marina owners? Because one of the things driving boats getting taken out of the water are their deadlines for taking boats out of the water and the ability to only take one at a time out once they start doing that.
Yes, because the director of the Invasive Species Institute is local, she has been, along with Roxy Johnson from the city plant, working with marina, with state parks and with marina owners.
Julie, if I can just say, many of you know that Peter Stein and I are driving to Lake Placid tonight after this meeting for the NYSAC conference. That's a five-hour drive. So if people could be as crisp as possible, that would be really great. Thank
you. I want to express my horror and disappointment at the failure of the parole board in Georgia to grant clemency to Troy Davis. There are still people demonstrating. There are still very faint hopes that another route or two may be followed. I won't go into that now because I don't want to keep the meeting going longer. There's a wonderful demonstration going on Wall Street right now about what Wall Street has done to Main Street. But the last thing I wanted to talk about is an article with a wonderful cartoon about Paul Krugman, the columnist. It says, Paul Krugman is tired of trying to reason with you people. That's why he started blowing up cars. And it's a very silly cartoon. But it's attached to a very serious article, which has a graph from Goldman Sachs, which looks at the effects of federal, state, and local fiscal policy since 2008. And it explains why it appears that the federal stimulus is not successful. The federal stimulus has been successful, but it's been effectively canceled by state and local governments who cannot run deficit budgets. We have to have balanced budgets. So all the cutting we've been doing has effectively undercut the stimulus money that came from the feds. I will try to have copies of this made and put in legislators' boxes. I had hoped to talk more about it, but I won't tonight. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Julie. Frank?
I'll try to be crisp, Madam Chair. A comment about the hydrilla. While some of us were here at the budget presentation yesterday, the Water Resources Council had a presentation by Roxy. And as you're putting together whatever team you need to, please don't overlook the council, because I know that there's interest in helping in some way there, Joe. And Craig is on the council with Roxy is also. First, I wanted to thank Pat Pryor, Mike Lane, and Leslin for taking the time to come to the Vietnam Veterans Watch Fire last Friday in the town of Lansing. It was a very well-attended event, and I think Richard Flavel is still sitting in the back. There was another Richard Flavel there, Dick, at the event. So, but thank you very much for attending. It was well done, and the fire was great. Tomorrow and Thursday, tomorrow in the town of Danby and Thursday in the town of Caroline, the next two in a series, I guess, of community meetings on the budget. We'll be having Joe is coming out as well as Marcia, and we're meeting at the Danby Town Hall at 7 and at the Caroline Town Hall at 7 on Thursday. Just a reminder that it's a follow-up to some of the previous meetings that have taken place. And I want to make one comment about the follow-up on Jim's comment about Chuck Broadhead. Some of you may not know this, but when Stu Stein was chairman of this board, he asked me to chair a committee called the Rural Affairs Committee, and it existed for 3 or 4 years. Chuck was a member of that committee. We had community outreach and whatnot. As a result of his involvement, the information group that we now have, that Marcia is part of, was Chuck's idea. And it was very well done, and we did dog and pony shows out in the community. And he did have, as Jim described, quite an influence on the community, and he participated indirectly through this board. But I thought you should know that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Peter.
I'll try to be brief, as I always do, but a lot of times I fail. I came into this room with no report at all, but I was intrigued by things that four people said, and they led me to want to say something. So let me take them in inverse order. One, Dooley. I dialed the number. It works just fine. Takes about 30 seconds, and you're off the list. Nathan. I, too, went to the James Turner meeting. I was torn because there was a conflict. The Tompkins County Democratic Committee picnic was at the same time, and I have an important obligation. I have to go get Irene's dinner as she's standing up at the podium making speeches. But I spent a little bit of time there, enough to shake Jim and Janice's hands and wishing them all the best and reminding him that when he came to Cornell in 1968 or something like that, I was the first hand that he shook to welcome him. I was at the time involved in a program that that a colleague of mine had instituted to try to prepare black students that were coming into the university for the first time in the engineering school to take physics, because physics was sort of a bar. A lot of them failed physics and couldn't pursue an engineering program. So this was a really key program. And so I met Jim and welcomed him here. And so today I was the first one that said goodbye to him as he came into the room. Will, I too was very impressed at that Friday meeting that we went to of the Soil and Water District. I've lived here a long time, and I sort of thought I knew everything that went on in Tompkins County, and believe you me, I did not. It was a very interesting session. It was absolutely freezing. I forgot to take my jacket with me, and the wind was whipping through a tent. I couldn't imagine it was going to be outside. But it was worthwhile. I put up my collar and suffered and listened, and I was impressed at the issues that I heard discussed. This was at the awards. They gave a series of awards. At the issues that I heard discussed that I didn't even know existed, had never heard of them before, about grazing farms. I thought all farms, all milk farms were grazing farms, but Pat said no more. And the stories of people who just clearly dedicated their lives to something that was very difficult to do, but because they believed that this was an important thing to do. And there were just several of these things that really their dedication for doing something that was good for us and everybody else was just impressive. and I clapped as hard as I could. And to Carol, about how things changed, as you were talking about, it just suddenly reminded me of, you know, when you get to be my age, you get nostalgic. And one thing my wife and I do a lot that we like to do is to watch old movies. And the other night we were watching an old movie, an old Ginger Rogers movie called Kitty Foyle. Ginger Rogers was not only a dancer, not only Fred Astaire's partner, but she was a great actress. This was a 1934 movie, and it was interesting at watching how little things have changed since 1934 and how much they have changed. So first, the how little. It was a romantic comedy about a couple that were from the opposite sides of the track, a rich young man that came from the main line and a poor Irish girl that came from the lower class, working class Irish district in Philadelphia that fall in love and how difficult it is for them to bridge this gap. And that story has not changed at all. That story could be written today about people who come from these diverse environments and fail to bridge the gap. But then when they were talking about the fact that she was saying they couldn't get married, they couldn't bridge the gap, they couldn't get married, and he says to her just off the top of his head, he said, "What's the problem? We're the same color, aren't we?" I mean, it came to me like a blow to my belly to remember that in 1934, if you were a different color, you couldn't get married in a whole lot of states. And, you know, nothing but a light remark that that's the way things are. And things have changed enormously in that time period since 1934. That completes my report.
Thank you, Peter. Mike and then Leslie.
I would certainly associate myself with remarks that Will and Peter made about the event at the Cary Farm for the Soil and Water Conservation Service. I think the thing that impressed me the most was one of the speakers stood up and talked about the amount of topsoil that had been saved by some of the programs that they did, the tons and tons of that. Anybody who's taken a look at photographs of the inlet in the spring and seen that dirty water coming down into Cuga Lake, which is causing so much trouble down there, knows that that is something we have to work tirelessly to try to avoid. And our farmers that are working on a lot of projects to stop that are key to saving our topsoil. Another thing happened that day, and we had an event in Cortland, where Tompkins-Cortland Community College cut the ribbon on its new extension center in the city of Cortland, downtown on South Main Street. Jim Dennis was there with me and the folks from Cortland County and the staff and Dr. Haynes and Senator Seward and others. It's a beautiful facility. I urge all of you to take an opportunity to go over there and go through it. It has four very large classrooms with computers, and it has a large lecture room. It has a conference room. And Martha Hubbard, who has been kind of the person shepherding this project along, said that there are more than 250 students registered for classes at the Extension Center. It's a complement to our own Extension Center and the Savings Bank building downtown on the Commons, and certainly they both add to the vitality of the Dryden campus for people who can take courses at those locations as well. So that's something that I think we can all be proud of in our with our college. And so that's what I wanted to tell you about. Oh, I wanted to tell you about one other thing, and that's the Civil War Commission, which has a meeting again on Wednesday the 28th at 7:15. We are doing pretty good with the raising funds for the scholarship, the nurses' scholarship. Frank, I'll waive mine tonight. If you haven't given, we need help because we received a challenge matching grant from a local foundation, and we would like very much to get to that $80,000 figure that we've been trying to reach with that. Also, on October 10th, the commission will sponsor the second, actually the third, major lecture on the Civil War commemoration, and that will be at the Borg Border Room. We're going to have historian Margaret Washington speak to us about the situation, the social situation that was going on at the time of the beginning of the Civil War. Thank you.
When is that?
That's going to be October 10th. I believe the time is 6:30 p.m. at the Borg Warner Room. That's a Monday.
Thank you, Mike. Listen.
Sorry, Martha. A little bit to say. I promise I'll buy coffee.
I should have said everybody takes as much time.
I'll buy coffee for you and Peter. I'll keep you awake, or 5-hour shops, or whatever those things are. Frank, thanks so much for mentioning the watch fire. It's one of those events that has special meaning and warms my heart each time I go. It's very moving to me, and I know to many of our veterans there and family, and even more so when you have personal connection to members of our armed services who served in the Vietnam War. So it was it's always good to be there and to get to talk to some of the veterans. I kept trying to leave, but, you know, one other person would say something else that I'd get caught up in the conversation. But it was very moving, as always. $2,151,000 is the new goal for United Way. Today was the United Way Day of Caring, the Stephen E. Garner Day of Caring at Stewart Park, where members of our community, it's something that's always heartwarming, donate items, personal care, food items that will be distributed to our local pantries and then go to citizens who can use it. Sitting there today, I heard someone just mention, you know, it's really interesting that some of the people who donate the most are the people who have received the most, because they know what it means to want something, and there may be things that they are not going to use that they end up bringing that someone else can use. So as well as a lot of other donations that came in for the flood relief to our friends and relatives and colleagues in the Southern Tier region. So thanks to everyone who was there and helped not only pack those boxes, but brought things along. I'm sure that many of my colleagues have had, you know, something to say before I got here, and I apologize for my tardiness, series of unfortunate events. But I wanted to add my voice to thanking everyone who was there in celebration of Dr. and Dean Turner this past Sunday. It was quite the event to hear the testimonials from people, and thank you, Nathan, for sharing yours, who grew and accomplished so much at the hands of these two remarkable, yet very humble and unassuming giants in our community. Dr. and Dean Turner did amazing work and will continue to. I was reading the newspaper, and I will comment on that, the caption that said, during a farewell celebration. This was by no means a farewell celebration for the two. They may be retiring, but goodness knows that they will continue to do. And they were very clear. It's like, we're not going anywhere. There's a lot of work to be done, and we'll be here, continuing to do this work here and elsewhere, doing much of the work that they have done. I was, of course, like many other people in the community, troubled by the headlines in the paper, and I know the newspaper has heard about that, that Cornell University honors an activist intellectual. This was an event, and I want to make it clear in case folks don't know, that was sponsored, hosted, paid for by members of this community, by the Southside Community Center, by GIAC, by members of ACTION, members of CLOC, the Community Leaders of Color, for the Multicultural Resource Center. This was not an event that was sponsored by Cornell University. It was very difficult to recognize that these two people who have brought tremendous honor, like many others, to Cornell, the work that they've done throughout this country and throughout the world. We're not that honored by the community, let me put it that way. So I know the newspaper will run its correction, or at least it had happened online, but it's the kind of thing that really needs even bigger correction than the little block that appears in the paper. Individuals in this community who have benefited and who have worked side by side with Dr. and Dean Turner, students, many of them who went on into the sciences and medical fields because of the prodding and constant nagging of Dean Turner, who many people don't know, but she's done amazing work at Cornell. Those are people in the community who said, these folks are retiring. There needs to be something done, and they did. So I do want to thank those folks for putting it on and for those who came and offered their testimonials, and hope that at some point in the very near future that Cornell will offer a similar celebration for Dr. and Dean Turner. These are not just two ordinary people. It's not every day that you find an African-American couple of such distinction and honor and accomplishment in our community, and they deserve to be recognized as such. So I wanted to add my voice to that piece as well. So thanks, and I hope the Ithaca Journal folks are listening, watching, whatever it is, and will do the right honor to Dr. Indian Turner. It is interesting that Peter shook his hand when he came here, and Carol shared her stories of being there with Dr. Turner. And 42 years later, the birth of Africana and their arrival, Africana, as they knew it and as they envisioned it, is changing. And that, I know, is very hard for them to swallow, and is very hard for many of us in this community to swallow. Some of the changes that are happening now are the things that we predicted and the things that we have said, please, let's have a conversation around, because we knew this is what would happen. And we can talk more about it. I don't want to take up much more time on the floor. But I know for them that this has been a very difficult journey, especially over the last year. So, Dr. and Dean Turner, thanks for your service to this community. Thanks for your graciousness. And thanks a lot for just being friends to many of us and mentors to even many more. Thanks.
Thank you, Leslie. All set? Okay. For my report, Peter, I thought maybe your story was going to go towards the radical change that happened with our armed forces today with the repeal, or the effective repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military services, that at this point, as of today, there's it is illegal to discriminate based on sexual preference. So I hope that actually happens. I have a couple of items related to the Regional Economic Development Forum Council, on which I represent you. Next Wednesday, the 29th, the full council will meet again in Ithaca at the first of two meetings that will be in Ithaca, 3 o'clock the room is 700 Clark Hall on the Cornell campus. The public is invited to the first hour of the meeting, and there's public comment as part of that, so I encourage people to go next Wednesday. In addition, next Thursday is the public forum that had been scheduled for, I think, September 8th and was canceled because of the flood in Binghamton. Not the flood here, but the staff couldn't come because the staff aren't from Binghamton. So it was rescheduled to next Thursday, 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock at the Women's Community Building. That's September 29th. So it's real important that people come to that. There's supposed to be pre-registration. Just come. I don't know why people have to make a phone call, but I would just encourage people to come. Women's Community Building next Thursday, 6 o'clock. And
I am on Tuesday. I'm missing the next Medicaid redesign task force meeting, which is in Troy next Tuesday. Patricia Carey's going in my stead. I'm missing it because the governor has called a day-long conference in Albany about the economic development councils and trying to figure out which one. So since Patricia could go to the Medicaid meeting, I decided I would go to the conference on the councils. It's all day. I did schedule a meeting with Tom Congdon in the governor's office, Carol, to talk about our favorite topic, which is gas drilling. And related to that, I went to part of the meeting of Carol's committee yesterday about assessment related to assessment and taxation issues on gas drilling. And I'm going to do a real short version of this and won't do it justice, but suffice it to say that it appears that the ad valorem tax by which localities, municipalities, and counties receive revenue related to gas production is at risk. The state has, surprise, figured out that they're going to need something like 225 new inspectors at DEC in order to properly monitor gas well production. So they're going to need money. So they're now the state is talking about a severance tax. Well, the gas companies don't want any more taxes than they have to pay. So they're trying to say, well, if you're going to add a new tax, the severance tax, then you really have to take away this ad valorem tax. So it appears we're a bargaining chip again. So, most states have a severance tax and an ad valorem tax, and some states have a severance tax that is shared at the local and state level. So there is absolutely no reason that couldn't be done. So since NYSAC is tomorrow, thanks to Carol and also David Kaye, we have drafted a resolution regarding this issue, and it's going to be on the agenda for the Taxation and Finance Committee tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. That's why we're leaving tonight. Nobody at NYSAC had any idea. And clearly this is being decided without counties in the room. And, most counties in the state don't think this relates to them. Well, gas drilling is around much of the state, and the Utica Shale will be a much bigger play than the Marcellus Shale. So I hope we can raise their awareness tomorrow. So big thanks to Carol and your committee, and also to David Kaye for helping to draft that. And one other piece of correspondence related to the health insurance exchange, a law that the state needs to pass in order to set up our health insurance exchange related to the Federal Affordable Care Act. The deadline is quickly going by. If we don't pass the law, there was a three-way agreement with Assembly, Senate, and Governor in June. There were two measures that had to be passed. On the Monday, the last week of session, the first measure passed the Senate 62-0. Passed the Assembly easily, and the governor was ready to sign on. By Thursday, word had gone out that passing this statute, which all it would do would be set up a New York framework for how we would implement the exchange. Didn't say anything about what the benefits it would be or the cost or anything like that. By Thursday of the last day of session, word had gone out from, I guess, certain elements in the Republican Party that would be the same as supporting Obamacare, and that they weren't going to do that. So leadership decided not to put it on the floor. It didn't come to a vote. And it seems to be stuck, even though I spoke to Senator Seward at this thing on Friday, and I've spoken to Tom O'Mara about it also. They're both supportive. But it needs to come to the floor for a vote. And if some people don't want to vote for it, that's fine. I'm sure it will pass. But leadership has to bring it to a vote. Or else we stand to lose $100 million, which is the federal support we would get if we implement it in time. So I will continue to try to bang that drum, as well as all the others. And I do hope that they will decide that an up or down vote is a reasonable thing to do. I believe they have to come back to ratify the PEF contract sometime in September or October, so there will be time to do this. And I can send you more information if anybody's interested. So that's my report. If there are no questions. Joe Mariana, County Administrator.
Thanks, Martha. A quick report, crisp report tonight. Two calendar items, one just a recognition that I'd like to make. Calendar items, I think Jim was probably going to talk about this. The budget forum, community budget forum, is next Monday night, 7 o'clock in the Borg Warner Room. That's our opportunity to present the budget to the broader community, and again, it's next Monday night at 7. The other calendar item, which isn't on your agendas yet, but I did want you to know about it, TC3 is going to be sponsoring a half-day event to talk about smart work, what we used to call lean office training, we now call smart work, with the idea of introducing this concept that we have helped to really perfect here to municipalities and school districts in both Tompkins and Cortland County, to invite municipal leaders, school district leaders, and so forth to be involved in something that will introduce them to this concept. We will be participating. We will have some of our folks who have been through the process provide testimony to the event. That will be on October 26th, the morning of October 26th, and I'm sure you'll get more information in the coming days to formalize that. My last item is the recognition item. A couple of weeks ago, we had a flood. Fortunately, the flood wasn't as severe as was experienced in some of our neighboring counties, but I have to tell you, during the middle of the night, we weren't at all sure that that was going to be the case, that it looked to be a devastating event here as well as in other places. I want to recognize the response that members of this government provided to that event. Our highway crews were out most of the night, led by Matt Whittemore, Supervisor Matt Whittemore, and many people who work with Matt, to be out on the roads, finding out what was going on, responding to flooding conditions as they occurred. Our bridge inspection group, led by John Lampman, were out with flashlights when it was dark, and then at dawn, looking at structural conditions of those bridges to make sure they were safe to travel on. Sheriff Lansing, his senior staff, his deputies, out riding the roads, and again, made a difficult decision to close roads based on the conditions that were known at that time and to reopen those roads as soon as was appropriate. The facilities crew, Arell, Chris Parker, his crews, to make sure our buildings were okay to occupy, that we hadn't experienced flooding, up well before dawn to do that. Marsha Lynch was very much involved in the public information all night long. Greg Potter was there to help with IT, Cheryl Nelson. I'm sure I'm missing our emergency management team, Lee Shurtleff, Beth Harrington, Jessica Verfus, Brian Wilbur, all really rallied to address this emergency. We also had others that came to try to coordinate the response, and very quickly, in this coordinated operation, Mayor Peterson, Julie Holcomb, the deputy fire chiefs, both of them, Dorman and Parsons, police chief, Valerie was there. We also had representatives of TCAT, of the Red Cross, of the Cornell Police Department, and of the State Police, all of whom converged in the Emergency Operations Center to try to coordinate the efforts. I think it's one of the few times, if not the first time, that we've pulled together an EOC operation. I think the experience was good in showing that we can get beyond turf and we can work to coordinate things. And to the extent we could, we did. I think the ultimate benefit of what we experienced was it was a great learning opportunity for us, too, to figure out where the glitches might be, where we can get better. There will be a meeting next week to talk about that for those who participated. What could we have done better? What resources did we need that weren't available to us during that event? So the next time this happens, we are even better prepared. So I do want to commend the many people in this government and other governments who responded to that event a couple of weeks ago. And that's my report.
Thank you, Joe. And I want to thank you for bringing that up and mentioning so many people by name, but I have to embarrass you a little bit. Beth Harrington came to me a couple days later and said, it was just amazing how you pulled things together. And you created, you had, well, since you've been here, created an environment of trust and people able to talk to you and listen and know that you're listening to them. And that the whole issue of turf and trust didn't exist, and she really said
you were the reason for that. So thank you very much.
Thank you for saying that. Thanks.
Carol?
Yeah, I have a question for Joe. And thank you for that report. Do we have any estimates yet of damages, both direct in terms of the stuff you were talking about, and then I know that people in this community, and I assume our agencies and social service department may be impacted by the numbers of people that we may be taking in from more devastated areas south of here. I know there are a lot of volunteers in the community going south, and
impact on operations impact. And things like that. I know that we have taken in folks who have been evacuated, particularly from nursing homes and other areas, that our institutions have done that. I don't have an estimate on what that may have cost them. In terms of infrastructure kinds of things, the damages are in, I think it's the mid-$300,000 or more range, mainly roads and bridges that experienced some deterioration during that event, enough to get us over the threshold to request FEMA compensation to help us pay for those costs. And all that paperwork, so you know, is well underway. Our emergency management folks have gone to work on making sure that we get all the paperwork in that we need to secure reimbursement.
Okay. And individuals who may have had damage? My assumption was that because we're not a designated FEMA disaster county, that those of us, and I count myself among that number, who experienced damage from either of the floods, either of the hurricanes, storms, whatever they were calling them, I'm surprised to hear that we are eligible for county assistance.
I don't know whether there's available assistance for private beyond, you know, the insurance coverages. I don't know that there'll be additional reimbursements beyond that.
It's my understanding there are two thresholds, and you have to have a certain level of damage for public assistance, for public infrastructure and assistance, and a different threshold to help individuals. Frank?
Thanks, Martha. You're absolutely right. We made, because Caroline and Danby were among the most heavily damaged towns, Lee told me, I've been in touch with him quite a bit, the threshold for municipal damage has been reached. The threshold for individual damage probably will not be reached. According to Lee, it's about $20 million. And this is a sad way to put it, but people needed to have their homes affected like they were in Tioga and in Owego and in Binghamton. And fortunately, we didn't have that kind of damage here with the sad part of it is that people that didn't have some minor structural, it's not minor to them, but the probability is we will not reach the threshold Martha mentioned for the personal one in order to have that designation. The question you asked about help, I know that we moved 62 individuals from the nursing home in Owego to Cayuga Ridge. And they were in need of a lot of help. If there's anyone who wants to volunteer there, Cayuga Ridge would be glad to have individuals there. But those 62 individuals are now at Cayuga Ridge.
Thank you very much, Joe. Before we go to the county attorney, Brian, are you ready with your award?
Yeah.
All set? Okay. Come on out. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, is that mom?
Yeah.
Mom?
She's going to take pictures.
Oh, you can do what you want.
Maybe somebody else can take a picture.
Yeah, I can take a picture.
Welcome.
Hi. This is the fun time that everybody gets to do, and it's too bad that we only get to do it like every 15 months, at least individually. In my district 9, it does take in parts of Dryden and Lansing. Right in the middle is obviously the town and village of Groton. And right in the middle of that, not unlike a lot of other places, is the school. And in small town USA all over, that is the cultural and entertainment center for most of the folks. And it's no different up in Groton. Having said that, I lean very heavily on the former little Barbie Satterley that lived next door to me. You've heard that before, out playing kick the can and stuff like that. She has grown up and is now the high school principal. I think that's really cool, and sorry, I'm never going to mention that again, or you're probably going to want to kick my can, and I don't want that. So, and Barb was nice enough to forward to me a very deserving candidate for September 2011 Distinguished Youth Award. She sent me a nice letter. I didn't bring my glasses up here on purpose because you sent it to me, so you should be the one to read it.
Very proud to read it. Yeah.
Use the mic.
I will.
Is the mic on?
Yes.
Great. Terrific. It is with great pride and pleasure that we, and I do we because I actually co-nominated with our National Honor Society advisor, Kathy Spallone. So we signed this together. So I'll say we know that she just couldn't join us this evening. So it is with great pride and pleasure that we recommend Stephanie Baxendale for the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award. This dynamic young woman takes a rigorous course load, including college courses at Groton High School. She clearly values academics, yet she is also very active with extracurricular activities and groups as well. She is a student who always asks, "What can I do to help?" She offers to assist teachers in the classroom setups, including shelving books, running errands, and organizing lots of club functions for advisors. She may not always hold a title or an office in these areas in which she gives of herself. Therefore, her time is truly volunteered altruistically, without personal gain. She is a quiet force of compassion and thoughtfulness beyond measure. She is clearly an exemplary student within the Groton Central School District. Stephanie is very involved in performing arts within our school. She is a member of the Wind Ensemble, Concert Choir, and Drama Club. She has received multiple awards and recognitions, including All County, All Area, All State, and NISMA Solos. She has served as Baden Council President, and she has served as a student volunteer when our district hosted NISMA Festival in 2009 and 10. In addition, she is involved in class council, student council, and National Honor Society. As a member of the Groton National Honor Society, she was selected and maintains her membership because of her excellent academic standing, ability to serve as a role model, as well as her commitment to service beyond self. Finally, Stephanie has volunteered for Groton's Winterfest each year. In addition to her school activities, which really consumes a lot of her time, Stephanie participates in many outside activities. She has been an active member of the Cortland Old Timers Band since sixth grade, Ithaca's concert band, both of which host many free concerts throughout the year and rehearse weekly for much of the year. Additionally, she's a member of the Intergenerational Band, which hosts two concerts every summer. And Stephanie uses her musical talents to volunteer and perform free concerts all over New York State, all on her free time. She is a member of 4-H and has been for 6 years, many of which she has held in office. She enjoys showing goats at both county and state fairs. She has served as superintendent for the Tompkins County 4-H Fair, and she has been a member for the annual Critter Camp weekend for 6 years. Stephanie has volunteered for Cayuga County Fair and numerous goat shows for several years, and she is an active member of her church and volunteers at the annual Vacation Bible School, helps at various church functions, and participated in last year's Easter production. Stephanie maintains responsibilities at home as well. Her family raises over 100 goats, 4 horses, and 3 cows. Along with her school responsibilities and extracurricular activities, she is very involved in their care, including feeding, cleaning, medicating, vaccinating, and trimming feet. In her spare time, she also does work part-time at the Groton Public Library. Yes. It is without reservation that we recommend Stephanie Baxendale for the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award. We are proud to say that she represents the high standards of excellence at Groton High School. And then please feel free to contact us. We look forward to hearing of her future endeavors while she's in her senior year at Groton High School, as well as once she leaves us. We know she will truly be successful. She is truly deserving, and I appreciate the recognition and Brian's willingness to accept our nomination. Thank you for that.
Having heard all that, can we cut her a break a little bit? She's a little late. She's obviously very busy. So. Stephanie, we at the county legislature, all of us, and also Bangs Ambulance, QB Radio Group, Purity Ice Cream, and A&B Awards and Engraving would like to give you this plaque, which reads, the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award presented to Stephanie Baxendale in recognition for your outstanding commitment to your community, and that is for September of 2011. And as representative of that district, I want to personally congratulate you on this. It's a great story. And if you would like to say a few words, that'd be great.
Wow, I didn't realize how busy I actually was. It's very interesting hearing it all on paper. It's like I was talking to my mom on the way here, and it's like, oh, I guess I do help a lot of people and do a lot of things, and I really don't think about it. I enjoy helping people, and actually I want to become a nurse when I leave school, and I want to become a nurse practitioner eventually. And so that's like my main goal in life. I just really want to help people. I love working with students, and I love helping the teachers, and I always enjoy seeing their happy faces when they know they don't have to do another load, because I know how much it means to me when somebody says, I'll do that for you, and I'm like, oh, thank you. So, yeah, thank you very much, everybody.
Stephanie, there's also some other goodies here from some of the other sponsors. You can stop and get some ice cream on the way home and that sort of thing. Good luck in school. Please do me one favor, though. If you happen to get a couple of B's in college, don't be as devastated as Nate was for getting a couple of B's. You missed that part. But, again, congratulations and thanks for coming.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Brian. That's great. All right, County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Okay. Well, I guess whoever arranged the agenda was smart not to put the County Attorney report generally after the Distinguished Youth Award. I didn't really have a report, but I do want to follow up on one thing Carol said about the solid waste opening. As all of you probably know, when we built the Solid Waste Center, there is a public viewing area, and there was some question at the time, of course, of just how much view people would get, et cetera. And it turns out that as an unattended or probably unintended consequence of the redesign, the public viewing area is actually much better. It affords a much better view of the things that are going on in the Solid Waste Center. And I hope that will be open during the opening, but from now on, I think that aspect of the Solid Waste Center, its access to the public, is much improved, even though that really I don't think was one of our intended consequences. It is a consequence of the redesign.
Great. Thank you, Jonathan. David Squire, Finance Director.
I guess I'm disappointed to report after 8 months our sales tax is starting to be very sluggish. We had budgeted a 3% increase for the year, and right now we're after 8 months it's about a 1.5%. So at this point in time we're below budget on sales tax. But I I really wanted to mention something that with those who are going to NYSAC about, and you'll be talking a lot about property tax cap, but one of the things that really comes home when you have a natural disaster that wipes out property values is the problem with financing local government with the property tax. For example, it's not unreasonable to expect that a substantial portion of the village and town of Owego has, the value has disappeared. And a little known fact is that Tioga County is responsible for guaranteeing the budgets for the town, the village, and the school district. So you could expect that people won't be paying their school bills in October down there, and that the school district will be returning to the town those bills, which they're responsible to pay off by April 1st, without any budget for that purpose. So when they talk about, you know, the state, and we could have to be fearful what the state might do. The state could say, oh, well, we'll forgive penalties and interest, but I can guarantee you they're not going to change the law to make it that the county doesn't have to guarantee the bill. So,
thank you for that point, David. I hope NYSAC does talk about this at some length. Brian?
David, relative to the sales tax issue, I know as a small business owner, recently, within the last 6 months, for those of us that file or pay online our quarterly taxes, they've changed that where you only pay once a year. And I actually had a from my business where I would have normally made a tax payment last week. I am not going to be paying that until like next March. And I wonder if that might be contributing to some of that. It's certainly something to look into. As a business owner, it certainly makes it more convenient to do it that way. It's just a bigger check that has to go once a year. But it may throw some of those projections off. And you know, I have no idea if everybody's on the same schedule or not, but you may be in for a windfall too in March. So just thought I'd share that.
We can hope. All right. Thank you very much, Brian. All right, we're up to the consent agenda. These are items that are non-controversial. If there's something you would like to have removed, just give a shout out. Resolution A, increase in hours of recording. Pull that one. Resolution B, authorize. Okay. Resolution C, this is the policy itself was revised by the GO committee, but the resolution is the same. Adoption of revised administrative policy 0213, disciplinary action or discharge procedure. Resolution D, and this is revised, deletion of administrative policies, policy 0303, holidays, and policy 0319, use of employee master status report for employee fringe benefits. Resolution E, the policy was revised. Okay. Resolution F, authorization to accept solutions to end homelessness program, grants and contracts, Department of Social Services. Resolution G, authorizing supervision and treatment for juveniles program, grant-funded contracts, Department of Social Services. And Resolution H, budget adjustment for youth services. And appointments to the Library Board of Trustees, John J. Clark, Jr., Elmira Magnum, to the Board of Assessment Review, Nelson Bills, and to Youth Services Board, Angela D. Sullivan. I get a motion on the consent agenda. Frank moves, Dooley seconds. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That is, those passed unanimously. I would like to ask, noting who's in the audience, patiently waiting, Pam, would you take care of just the resolutions first, and then we'll go to public safety for the resolution? Is that okay?
Okay, so I guess I'll start with the one that was just pulled from the agenda.
from the consent agenda. Resolution B, authorizing the amendment to the certificate of incorporation of Tompkins County Development Corporation to provide for increased activities associated with the promotion of community and economic development, and I so move.
And Will seconds that. And Frank, was that you who pulled it off?
No.
Kathy? Okay. Kathy?
Thanks. Would you explain this?
Well, this is being done, it's basically expanding the area outside of Tompkins County where TCAD would be allowed to, the IDA would be allowed to offer these loans, issue bonds. So it's expanding the geographic area to areas that for not-for-profits that would not necessarily have access to financing otherwise. It's a way for them to increase their income.
Michael, would you like to? Michael Stamm is here from TCAD. Did you want to add anything?
The resolution will allow the Tompkins County Development Corporation, which was recently formed in the last year, to allow that corporation to issue tax-exempt bonds to local not-for-profits that have projects outside of Tompkins County. For example, Cougar Medical Center, if it's building a facility in Cortland, TC3 in Cortland, Francisco Racker Center and some other counties, Cornell University. So we would be able to issue tax-exempt bonds for local 501c3s for projects outside of Tompkins County.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. Frank, and then Kathy?
No, I was going to offer an explanation.
Okay. Kathy?
I'm having a little coughing fit, so I apologize. I'll try and get through this. my concern is, many of you are aware, is local employment. And one facet of out-of-county projects is a concern about out-of-county employers and out-of-county contractors being utilized that don't pay a comparable wage to workers and what contractors here would pay. So there's some concern that we would be utilizing local resources to fund not just out of county, but out of region, workers that would lower the standard of living here. Can you speak to that? Because I know that the TCAD and IDA have a strong record of being cognizant of these problems and addressing them.
Yes, I think that our same policies and procedures that the IDA uses, that the Development Corp uses, would be in place to review projects. So if a local not-for-profit comes to us with a project outside of Tompkins County and asks us for tax-exempt financing, we would ask all those same questions about that project, even if it is taking place in another county. And I would suspect that if there's rules and regulations in that other county that are even more significant than ours, that we would take those into consideration. Federal law will require us to hold a public hearing in that county and go through the same process that we would go through here. So we would get input from that community as well.
I appreciate that response. For me, it's a concern, and at this time, I'm not going to support this resolution.
Any other debate? Dooley.
I was curious about the amendment to the certificate labeled fifth. The operations of the corporation will be principally conducted within the state of New York, which makes it sound as though some of the projects that you might be asked to fund would be outside of New York State. Am I reading this wrong?
Certainly that isn't the intent. It's unlikely that we would be issuing bonds for local not-for-profits for projects that are outside of New York State.
Would it be acceptable to get rid of the word principally?
For that, I would have to defer to my bond counsel, who is not here.
Well, I'm uncomfortable enough that I guess I will probably vote against this.
Carol?
Oh, I'm trying to remember if we discussed this a little bit at the committee and felt that if there were some activity of some organization that was eligible for these bonds otherwise, that activity wasn't entirely in New York State of the organization, that we shouldn't count them out. So I don't know, if the Racker Center was doing something in concert with somebody from another state, or a Cornell University had a building that within which something happened outside of New York State in addition to inside New York State, it should be covered by this society.
And again, I think the goal here is to help our local not-for-profits, and if they have a demand for their service and a business opportunity in some other place outside of Tompkins County, it's good for our local not-for-profits. Just as in Pennsylvania, the IDA there issued tax-exempt bonds to help Guthrie finance projects all throughout New York State and the Southern Tier, and that was good for that organization.
Was it written this way because, for example, Cornell has activities in Qatar?
Not at all, no. It wasn't written in any way for any specific not-for-profit. I imagine the language was taken out of the federal tax code.
Jonathan?
Yeah. Under the not-for-profit corporation law, you have to state what the principal place of business is. And that's, you use the word principal. And in the form, which this basically comes from, it basically says the operations of the corporation will be principally conducted in or within, and then you fill in the blank. This actually used to say Tompkins County. Now it says State of New York. That is actually the only real change that they're making. But that's the common language, and that's what it's used, and that follows the not-for-profit corporation law.
So in other words, it's not to say that we'll mostly do business within New York State. It says that the principal
place
location,
of business
place
is
of business,
within,
is
right.
New York State.
Well, if that's what it means to say, it could say it clearer.
Well, tell it to Albany, I think, right? If this is how it has been done before and this is what we're supposed to be passing, I hope people will support it. Anything else? Leslie?
So I too was a little confused, and I really should have called and asked questions, so I apologize. I understand what it does for our non-for-profits. Can you help me understand what it does for us as a county?
Well, I think the secondary, and I would say this is a distant second aspect of this that's positive, is that it would generate fee revenues for the local development corporation. And I think, as you all know, economic development in this community is substantially funded by fee-based revenues to the IDA and to the local development corporation. So it would relieve significantly a future burden if we had the deal flow of funding economic development by local taxpayers.
And we set up this development corporation because the state had removed the ability to use the IDA to fund those nonprofit projects. So this has really been tremendously important to our ability to continue to fund TCAD. Leslie?
I have a follow-up. Mike, I'm sorry. I didn't hear quite well your answer to Kathy's question around, some of the concerns that we have with sustainable wages, with those things. Is there anything that we have in place here that would help make sure that some of those things are addressed, or at least they're being looked at?
Again, our policies at the IDA, which were essentially replicated by this new development corporation, include all the considerations around construction wages, mm-hmm. and permanent worker wages. There are no specific requirements, but we do ask all of those questions, and
right.
consider the responses before a project is approved. And I think there's four IDA members here and some ex-IDA members that I think can testify to the fact that we spend a lot of time looking at the wages that will be paid to the permanent employees of a project, as well as who will be building a project. And keep in mind, here we're talking about projects that will happen in some other community. And if that other community has its own wage requirements, I'm sure we'll take that into consideration as well.
Nathan, Brian, Pat, and Peter on something that was on the consent agenda. Go ahead.
It's off the consent agenda now, Martha.
Yeah, I get
that's
it.
Why.
I understand.
Okay.
I understand. Nathan, Brian, Peter, and Pat.
No, I have no additional point to make. Mike made my point that this is important for fee generation.
I'm sorry, can't hear you.
I said that Mike made my point. This is important for fee generation so that we can continue to support the efforts of TCAD. And so I think that this is just a benefit for us, but I don't think it causes any harm. All right,
Michael.
Thank you.
And keep in mind that there's a competing source of access to the tax-exempt bond market, and that's the Dormitory Authority of the State of New York, which has zero discussions of wages.
Right. Brian?
And for each of these projects individually, before they're bonded, they all come back here, right?
Yes.
We have one here tonight as an example.
Peter?
Do you have a limited amount of funds to do this with? That is, if you fund one, does that mean you can't fund another?
These aren't our funds. They're not your funds. They're not public funds. All we're doing is serving as a conduit to the tax-exempt bond market.
Okay, so anything you do just is good. What, any project that you fund produces income for the organization.
Essentially, what with tax-exempt bonds in the old days issued by the Industrial Development Agency or now issued by the Tompkins County Development Corporation gives local not-for-profits access to the tax-exempt bond market so they can borrow funds like the Francisca Racca Center at a lower interest rate. That debt is not guaranteed by the local development corporation or the county or local taxpayers. It's on the full faith and credit of the not-for-profit that's applying. So that's the one major benefit. Again, a smaller, vastly secondary benefit is that those projects generate fees for local economic development and relieves Tompkins County taxpayers from having to fund those economic development activities.
And it's not like the tax abatements that the IDA does. So
right.
Nothing to do with property taxes. Pat and Carol?
If we were to not agree with this, how much of an impact would it be on our local nonprofits that might have chosen to take advantage of this?
Well, it's difficult to say. We don't have any deals in the hopper. This is not being brought forth to you for any specific not-for-profit or any project in mind. It's something that, you know, we're trying to be creative and proactive to help our local not-for-profits, because we have seen projects in the past where our local not-for-profits have set up satellite activities in Cortland County or other communities and haven't been able to benefit by this, and therefore they're borrowing money at higher interest rates.
So that would be the big impact.
It would cost them more money to cost them higher interest rates, and their project would be likely scaled back because of that.
Carol and Pam?
Yeah, I appreciate that there are agencies, organizations in town that that would be willing to bring us their business instead of going to the Dormitory Authority or to other potential bonding sources and keep their business local. I think it's one of the ways in which we can, you know, they can participate in funding local activity. And I also would welcome at some point a discussion of what our policies as a legislature ought to be related to employment and meeting wages. I think that ought to be done in a separate resolution that where we sort of lay out the pros and cons and understand the implications. And I welcome that discussion at some point. I'm not sure that I think that this is the right place to do that.
By law, the IDA and the LDC are independent organizations, and we have more than the recommended number of county legislators on both of them. So the legislature already has more influence than the Public Authority Accountability Act says we should. But this body cannot tell the IDA or the LDC what to do. It has limited authority in this kind of bonding resolution.
Well, then I might further welcome having that discussion before we revisit potentially the notion of representation on that board, so that we have a voice there and a good
Pam?
Discussion to have.
I'd just like to remind my colleagues that when we were going through the process of setting up the local development corporation, we had extensive discussions and extensive revisions on the part of the council on the proposed local development corporation, because we felt strongly that we wanted the ability to provide the bonding for our not-for-profits, but we wanted to make sure that the legislature maintained control over any purchases that there have been attempts in other parts of the state to use the local development corporation to go around some of the other structures that are in place for comparable wages, prevailing wages. And so we limited the local development corporation to the bonding function because of that fact. And we also included in there all of the provisions was said earlier that are included in terms of wages and of hiring local people. So it's no stronger than what we have, and perhaps we need stronger, but we included all of that in the local development corporation. And believe me, it took months to get this thing through the way that we wanted it. So we did have extensive discussions about this when we were setting up the local development corporation.
All right. Ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Opposed? That passes 13-2. Thank you
very much.
Thank you. Pam, you have?
I have, yes. I have a resolution I, approving the issuance by the Tompkins County Development Corporation of up to $4 million in aggregate principal amount tax-exempt revenue bonds for the Francisco Racker Centers, Inc. project. And I so move.
Seconded by Leslin. Discussion? Dooley.
Am I correct that you will change lines 33 and 34 so that they won't have underlined italic words in them, that they were stressed for our purposes so we would understand it? I'll move to make those non-italic. That's the easiest thing to do.
Okay, is there a second for that?
That's friendly.
All right. Anything else, Kathy?
Can we just get a comment about the possibility of this building project being contracted and done by local workers?
Would that be Roger? Roger Sibley, director of the Racker Center.
How do you do? Yes, we're actually building. We invited 7 contractors, including, I'm trying to remember, 2 or 3 local. None of the locals actually chose to bid on it. So we ended up going with LaChase.
Can I just ask the follow-up? LaChase is known to employ local workers. To your knowledge, are there local workers employed
by LaChase? A lot of the subs are local.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
And
shall I finish?
Go ahead.
Resolution J, negative declaration for authorizing disbursement of housing fund round three funds, and I so move.
Seconded by Pat. Carol?
I'd like to ask permission to abstain from this vote. The matter that it pertains to is something that there's a family connection to, so I will not be voting.
All right, any objections? Carol abstaining. All right, ready to vote? Ken.
I have a question that may surprise everyone because it concerns the contracting and employment of this particular project and what the chances are that this project will utilize local contractors and local workers. You might be sensing a theme here.
Well, this is the negative declaration. Should that question go to the resolution itself?
Well, I think that this is, I am not, oh, I see, it would be the next one, yeah.
Kathy, do you want to answer now or the next one?
It doesn't matter, it's going to come up and I'd like it to be the asked and answered on the record.
Okay. Ed, would you have some more knowledge about this project?
I can't specifically answer the question with absolute certainty. But I know INHS has been building in this community for a long time, and my belief is that they employ local contractors on their jobs, but I can't answer that with certainty. And it's not a condition of the funding at this point in time, how the construction is done. This funding is really intended at this point, and the way the program works is to underwrite the cost of the land to make it more, whatever is built, more affordable. So it doesn't directly go to the construction.
Frank, did you have a hand up?
Yes. Quick question. Ed, while you're standing there, while the resolution describes the project and names it as Holly Creek in the town of Ithaca, can you tell us where it is?
It's off West King Road behind the motel up there at the corner of King Road.
Country Inn?
Behind there.
Thank you.
All right, ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution J, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes 14-0 and one abstention. And Resolution K?
Resolution K, authorization to disperse county funds pertaining to the housing fund, and I so move.
Second. Leslin seconds. Any discussion? Carol, same abstention? Same permission? Okay.
Yes, thanks.
Kathy?
Just to clarify my comment from before on this resolution that's more pertinent to it, there's a lot of people out of work. One of the things that we talk about with regard to economic development and with regard to working to see that we have adequate low-income and moderate-income housing in our community is the notion that we actually support our local community with jobs, and the jobs that we sometimes overlook are these, what may seem short-term to those of you who don't do it for your career, but these construction jobs. And they're made up of many, 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 many little projects. And when government recognizes the importance of these jobs to local communities and how these jobs and the people that fill these jobs can enhance a local community by having an opportunity to become contractors themselves, by having an opportunity to contribute their time and volunteer efforts to local agencies, that's when we have a thriving community across all classes. So I hope that, for the record, whether there's requirements or not, everyone takes heed of the fact that every time we make a decision like this, we are helping to build our community or we're helping to undermine it. And when this is discussed with the INHS, I hope that someone will convey to them the importance of considering hiring local. The fact that it's low-income housing is a wonderful thing. Low-income housing can also be built by well-paid workers that contribute back to their community, local workers. Thank you.
I'm sure Paul would have been here if he had known this would be an issue. Frank?
Thank you, Madam Chair. As the legislator whose district this will be constructed in, I would urge your support of this project. The opportunity to provide the kind of housing that this funding does answer is very much needed in that area, and that area is becoming a real crossroads development area. So to achieve some of the things that Kathy has just mentioned, I think it's important to be supportive of this type of housing. Thank you.
And I think the phone number is 277-4500. Is that right? If anybody would like to call Paul Mazzarella. Is that the right phone number?
There now.
He's there now. All right. Ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Pam, let's go to the public safety resolution so that Deb Dietrich can have something of an evening, too. So we'll come back to your report. Peter, you want to take resolution L?
Yeah. This is resolution L for Lima, appropriation from the contingent fund, bail fund program, OAR, and that is moved by the committee.
And there's a second, seconded by Pam. Any questions? Frank.
Yeah, I noticed Debbie is here, so with all due respect, Peter, Deb, I notice that we've helped fund this, and I'm not disputing the importance of it because it has saved us money over the years, but I notice that at least on three occasions we've, according to these footnotes, we've put in about $10,000 in three different years, and there may have been other incidental contributions too, but this looks like it adds up to $30,000, and this $15,000 will bring it to $45,000. What's become of the $30,000? Isn't that recirculated because those monies come back?
Yes, a small proportion, Frank, are forfeited. We have a less than 5% forfeiture rate over the years. The last time the county legislature appropriated money for this was December of 2008. So it has been quite some time. Right now we have about, I didn't bring the exact numbers, between $60,000 and $75,000 that are circulating in bail. So it's still out there. It's just circulating. Bails have increased. The amount of bail, we bail up to $2,500 now, OAR. The time, I think you weren't on one of the committees where I presented the report, but the time it's taking for money to be returned to OAR from the courts has lengthened substantially over the last several years. So it's not lost. It's out there circulating and churning. But right about a month ago, we had to go into our line of credit to continue to make bails, and that costs us interest and other kinds of charges. So this helps us avert that.
Could I ask a follow-up?
Yeah, go ahead, and then Leslin and Peter.
Deb, what's your perception as to why the courts are holding on to the money longer? Is there any rhyme or reason for that?
Well, some of it, when we've increased the amount of bail to $2,500, some of them are a bit more serious than old charges, so that the case can take a little bit longer to work its way through at a $2,500 bail as compared to a $1,000 bail. The other issue is that it's just taking longer, and we really have to hound the town courts, in particular the town courts, to get the bails returned in a timely way.
Charge interest?
No.
About interest? What?
Frank's question. I'm good.
Thank you, Peter.
Yes, as I understand it, Frank, there's another problem, is that when there's a fine due for when a person is found guilty and they're assessed a fine and they don't have the fine, I'm told that what the judges do sometime is take the bail and pay the fine with it. They're not supposed to do that, but they do it anyway. Isn't that right, Debbie?
Yes, that is a clearly illegal practice that some of the town justices
have been doing on occasion. We've got an attorney who, before he went into private practice, he was a public interest attorney, and he went to court for us a couple times on those issues. He's now in private practice, and it's very tough to appear before the town justices to try to get that money back. So I sometimes do it, since I don't make a living through the law. And so we're trying to educate the magistrates that bail is not for the payment of fines.
Is that a role? Excuse me.
Sure, go ahead.
Is there a role here for our resident attorney, Jonathan Wood, perhaps? Yeah, that's not rhetorical.
Well, it's possible. You know, I'm not the attorney for OAR, which is a separate organization.
Yeah, but it's our money.
But if the county money is at stake, I think, you know, in circumstances, we could talk about that, because I could certainly appear.
Debbie shouldn't be beaten up on the justices.
Would it make sense if you drafted a general letter, sort of by the way, and... This is a lot.
No, it really doesn't work that way.
Okay.
General letters to the community of judges is not a way to communicate with them.
Okay. Are we ready to vote on Resolution L? All in favor, please raise your hand. Sure. Right. I'm sorry. It needs to be a roll call. Sure, from roll call.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Aye.
Would anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous.
No, I'm a yes.
You're a yes.
I just
okay.
wanted to know where it got left with Jonathan in terms of checking into this.
Yeah, I'll call. We'll speak.
Oh, thank you. I wasn't clear what was going to happen. I heard, don't send letters. Okay, got it.
All right, thank you very much. And I know Paula is waiting for Resolution E. Is that right, Paula? Okay. Not A, just E? We're not... there was another one that was pulled off. So, all right. Can I ask Mike Lane? It went through GO and budget, so but the revision was in GO. So,
I'm happy to move Resolution E, adoption of revised administrative policy 0-23, smoking policy.
Is there a second? Jim seconded that. And who pulled it off?
I did.
Frank.
I want to make sure that I'm reading this correctly. And Mike, you know, some of us were, well, in the minority, were concerned about the smoking, and we indirectly or directly supported, particularly when I was on the Board of Health.
Excuse me, Frank, you should be looking at the revised one. Policy was revised at committee, and that should be in your folder.
Excuse me?
With red.
Let me get that. Thanks, Martha. Hang on.
It says revised as adopted by Government Operations Committee 9/15/11. Get that? Okay.
Maybe you can answer this question really quickly, then, not to hold everyone up. Has the provision regarding smoking in privately owned vehicles been struck in the revision? Or is it still in the revision?
I believe we're talking about county-owned vehicles and county-owned properties.
This says, in the revision, under definitions, it says facilities and property. Tompkins County buildings, parking lots, entrance lanes, and sidewalks, structures, county-owned vehicles, or privately owned vehicles parked on county property.
Well, that's on the county property.
So if anyone is in their own car or truck or whatever, and it's parked in the parking lot out here, that's going to be prohibited.
That's the way I read it, yes.
I think that's overkill, Mike. I think that the opportunity to I would support, as I have, not smoking in a building, not smoking in a restaurant, because I think that that's, as you have eloquently said in the past, that it's intrusive on your air. If I'm sitting in my own car and I'm smoking, I'm not offending anyone. This is simply overkill, in my opinion. And I, I certainly would take issue with that. And also, I think a clearer definition of county sidewalks needs to be defined.
That issue was discussed. A county sidewalk would be the internal sidewalks within the county property. For example, we were talking about the Human Services Building. The sidewalk that runs along the street is not county property.
Peter, and then Pat.
Well, I didn't weigh in on this weighty subject, but if you were going to smoke in your car and put the windows down, then it's like smoking outside on county property. So I suppose you could put something in saying you could smoke with the windows up, but that doesn't seem like a very intelligent thing either. I mean, the argument that was made on a couple of issues that bothered me, which I thought were more intrusive, was that they can interfere with the enforcement of this. That if you if a policeman, if they see somebody smoking, has to check and see whether it's all closed, it's closed up or not. It's too much of a problem. So,
Pat and then Carol.
With respect, Frank, because I think it's pretty apparent that you disagree with this, but as one of the people who is very seriously impacted by secondhand smoke, I have to support what Peter just said about if I walk by a car where someone inside is smoking, it's no different than if they're standing next to me if the windows on the car are open. And given the difficulty with potentially trying to enforce any kind of a regulation that would allow smoking, for example, if the windows were closed versus if they were open. Well, what if they were open just a crack or just a little bit, or back windows were open but the front windows were, you know, whatever. It just seemed too difficult to figure out how you could enforce that in a way that would be consistent. And I really have to say that I really strongly support this new policy because of the potential impact of secondhand smoke on passersby.
All right. We don't have to agree on everything. So is there anything new to say, Carol?
Yeah, I have a question about what the discussion was about exempting three particular, or establishing areas with three particular departments.
I can respond to that. We have some bargaining units that these things have to be negotiated with, and we have certain particular circumstances. For example, the jail, where the corrections officers are confined to that area in order to do their jobs, and those exemptions will provide an employee-only locale where they can smoke if they choose. The airport was a little different because there are contracts, there are subcontracts at the airport which cover the issue of smoking by employees of the subcontractors, and that's going to have to be addressed in the future, but at this point we had to honor those.
Wait, so all of our other departments, all of them?
No.
Have places where people who are addicted to this despicable habit can exercise?
No, we're talking about just the two locales.
I don't know if, well, I can. I mean, as much as I hate smoking and think that it's an awful thing to be doing, I'm not sure I can support this based on particular current departments. As opposed to having something that would apply, I don't know, to different habits of different particular employees as the years go by.
So that's Brian, did you have your hand up?
I did a lot of discussion about
it. Did you have a hand up, Brian?
No.
All right. Can we vote, please? Are we ready to vote? All in favor of the revised policy and the resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10, 11, opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4. That passes 11-4. I would like to call a 2-minute break so Jim can change the film. I'm going to be back here in 2 minutes. Thanks.